AI and robots in film, TV and literature. This panel was recorded at SWECON 2015, Confuse in Linköping, Sweden. The participants are Madeline Ashby, Tommy Persson, Oscar Kjellner, Tommy Padron McCarthy, and it is moderated by Patrick Centervall. I apologize in advance for the less than stellar sound quality of this episode. The recording level was simply too high. I do hope that it won't scorch your ears. SWECON poddar, en poddradio från svenska science fiction och fantasy kongresser. This microphone and I will not be good friends, I think, but I will not talk that much. Welcome, everyone. My name is Patrick Centervall, science fiction fan from Gothenburg, writer of short stories, and I will be the moderators. I will be mostly asking questions to the panels, to the panelists, and they will start, of course, with presenting themselves. So, I think Tommy.
Yeah, my name is Tommy Persson. I'm a science fiction fan, but I also worked a very long time in the AI lab, artificial intelligence lab. I work at the same with Patrick Doherty that had a talk before. So if you saw this big helicopter flying and the small, a lot of the software was written by me. And I've been interested in AI a long time and have watched a lot of films and read a lot of books. Yeah.
And I am, it's me. I'm Thomas Padron McCarthy. I used to be a PhD student with expert systems and AI in the late 1980s, but then AI became unfashionable in the academic world, so I stopped doing that, switched to databases, among other things. But I've always had an interest in AI and robots and philosophy of AI also.
Hi, my name is Madeline Ashby, and I am the author of a book about robots a couple of different books about robots in something called The Machine Dynasty, which is ironically published by a publisher by the name of Angry Robot. Mostly, I think I may have been among the first that sort of sent them a book about angry robots, and I think they just were like, oh, that's on message, and bought it. So I frequently deal with issues, in my fiction, I frequently deal with issues of both robotics and artificial intelligence. And the third in that series will be coming out soon. And in April, I will have a book out from Tor called Company Town, which also deals sort of tangentially with artificial intelligence and things like that. So, yeah, that's me.
All right. My name is Oscar Kjellner, and I am a software engineer, but I do not program AIs. I only write about them. I am also a science fiction, fantasy, and horror writer, and I just realized earlier today that when I took a look at my short stories that pretty much everyone, well, there is one that doesn't have AIs. Otherwise, all of them have AIs in one way or another, so it is a topic that I find very interesting.
Thank you all. The description of the panel is, for those of you who doesn't remember it by heart, is how have the role of AI and robots changed in science fiction over time? Which are the best, worst, or most interesting descriptions and why? What aspects have been considered or missed? So that is basically what we're going to try to cover. And we're going to start with a quickie or not. I don't know. That depends on your answer. And that is your favorite robot or AI. Oscar, you go first.
Right. My favorite robot, I don't say that this is the best one, but it is my favorite because I grew up with him. Of course, it's Data from Star Trek, Next Generation. I just love that guy. As I grew older, I always wondered why he wanted to become human. Because it seems like a pretty stupid idea, actually. But
He was a good character, and I loved him when I was a teen. I still do.
For me, it's probably going to be the touch comas from... See, yes, from Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex, which, if you don't know, is a an animated series from Japan that sort of takes the Ghost in the Shell universe that Masumi Ichiro designed and sort of expands it a lot and turns it into this slick police procedural, essentially. And the Tachikomas are these tiny... Not tiny, they're big, they're the size of cars, but they're these sort of hexapod robots with a empty tank on the back of them. Masumi, what you may not know is that Shiro himself really loves spiders, which is why I love his work and can never meet him. And he designed these sort of hexapod robots that look a lot like big blue spiders about the size of cars, but they talk like, you know, in the voices of little girls. And so they sound really cheerful and friendly and stuff, and they shoot webbing and can kill you, and they talk by gesturing their claws, and the entirety of, you know, in theory, Major Kusanagi is the protagonist of Standalone Complex, but I would argue that actually the real heroes of the show are the Tachikomas, because the entire series is about them sort of self-actualizing and becoming individuals and realizing what they really want to be, which is not humans. They decide, they're like, no, oh, no. But they really want to be their... They can be not humans, but still be their own people. And stuff. So it's really a show. It's really a story about little girls growing up, actually. So.
Okay, I always liked the T-800, of course, but lately I thought about this earlier today, and the small robot from Robot and Frank, one where he is helping an older man who can't really take care of himself. And this man is an ex-burglar who instructs the robot to help him with burglaries to pick locks.
Yes.
Yeah, it's hard to say a favorite. As you can say, too, I like the knife drone in I Am Banks, the player games. They are kind of sense of wonder. They are very small, they are very intelligent, and they have extremely lot of power. I mean... And I also like Bomb Number 20 from Darkstar.
Oh.
I mean, I think it is a good robot. It reasons philosophical. It makes a decision. It drops itself when it reaches the philosophical consequence of its reasoning. Yeah.
Yes, thank you. Robots, androids, artificial intelligence has been a theme in science fiction for quite a long while, and maybe even before, or from the first science fiction story, mm-hmm. Frankenstein, if you like, a built man, actually. So let's go into that. It has lived on, and I mean, we will not see the end of robots in literature or movies. So what is actually the fascination with robot, with artificial intelligence? Who wants to go first?
I have an answer.
Okay. Go right ahead.
I have an answer because I was raised Catholic, and I went to a Jesuit university. So, like, and I don't practice anymore, but the fascination is with creating something in one's own image and then expecting it to be good. Which is ridiculous and silly. I mean, the entire Eden myth is about, like, I made you in my own image and then you screwed up. And it's like, well, of course. Like, we get... But I think that idea of we made something that is supposed to reflect us, it reflects the worst of us as well, right? And so I think that... Even that sort of that Frankenstein story, even the Frankenstein story is I made you, and I made you to be perfect. You are the best thing I could ever produce. And still you hate me. And it's anyone who's ever had children knows that, you know, I put so much energy and so much effort and so much, I built you, I made you, and stuff, and still you defy me, and so on. And, you know, in some parents that's, I made you and I can break you. And in others it's just this horrible sense of betrayal. So I think it's enduring because it's about reproduction. I think when people read my books, they were sort of like, wow, this is really about families. And it's like, there's no way that you, to me, there's no way that you can tell a story about building another life or building another existence that isn't always about reproduction and copying yourself and copying the worst of yourself into something else, and how horrifying it is to sort of look at that and realize that that's being thrown back at you. So that's my answer.
Tommy is next to you.
Well, I think it is because the question of moral agency and personhood, because a lot of people don't want to accept that the machine can be a moral entity. They want to be able to kill machines. They don't accept that an artificial intelligence think in the same way that we think, and therefore we should have to treat them in the same way or something. They like to see something magical in our brain that is not possible to implement in a machine. So I think a lot of the fascination is this thing that, yeah, there is, what can we do? But people really don't want us to succeed, a lot of people. Maybe that has changed a bit, but before 5-10 years ago, you always got this argument that, no, you can't make a thinking machine because, you know, it's not real thinking. There must be something extra in a human brain. I mean, yeah.
Oscar was next.
Yes, I believe that the fascination with AIs and robots are because they are us. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, they are not us. They are the same, but different. And if we could build a strong AI with consciousness, well, the thing is that we have often defined us as humans depending on what is unique with us compared perhaps with animals or with simple machines. But if we were actually able to construct a strong AI with its own consciousness, suddenly, well, in a way, as you said before, they would be our children.
Yeah.
And we would reflect ourselves in them. And it's possible that we could learn, when we are not unique anymore, what then is a human? And perhaps the greatest gift of all that a fully functional AI can give us is a further understanding of what it means to be human.
Yeah. Thomas?
Okay, maybe one reason, at least nowadays, that we are fascinated with robots and so on is that we've always liked strange creatures, like these humans with big feet living at the edge of the map where be dragons, you know. But there does not seem to be any space aliens, at least not within easy reach. And magical creatures like mermaids are also hard to find. But we have robots in reality, an AI, sort of. So if we want to relate to things and write about them and understand a bit how they are in reality and base stories on that, robots are good for that.
Yeah. That's true.
And we're all right.
Yes, everyone is right. You get an A on this exam I'm putting here. No, but if we talk about also as I started with saying, just Frankenstein threw that out, and we have, this is perhaps an question that is hard to answer, but robots in literature, in movies for the last century, actually, or more than that, what do we see in the development of the robots or in artificial intelligence? Could we see a theme in go from this thing to another thing? Or
I don't know about movies, but books, I thought before in books there was always a question about, is this a real intelligence, the often had a test, you know, can it solve a problem with where you don't have the parameters known from the beginning, or does it have that property? But nowadays you seem to accept artificial intelligence and as, yeah, of course we can build an artificial intelligence, and of course it will be on our level. What are you talking about? This is not a problem. It seems to be more acceptance. I don't know if it is that you see it in films or not, but I think there is more acceptance to it.
Yeah, the philosophical part has sort of disappeared.
Yes. Unfortunately.
I think like the change that I've seen is that robots are a lot sexier now than they used to be. Like, it, you know, even back to the creature, to Frankenstein, Dr. Frankenstein's creation is this hodgepodge horror creature of different sewn together parts, and he's very large and whatever, but he can never have a real, like, he can never have a normal or real life. He can never find a companion because, you know, he's disfigured or something like that. And that's not true of, you know, the robots that we see on television or even read about. Certainly not in my books. All of my robots are, like, extremely hot. That's because why would you, like, but they're also sold, right? They're the product of things that are bought and sold. And whenever you buy and sell people, you are buying and selling beautiful people, usually. Even down to the people that you employ, you know, there's the whole beauty bias and what is now being called facism, which is, like, the most ridiculous term ever. So I think we've seen this change from like from Frankenstein's monster to like the robots on like on humans or in Battlestar Galactica who are like intended to be attractive. Like the biggest surprise on Galactica is that Dean Stockwell could possibly be an AI. Like, it's like, no one's gonna build that, guys. No one's gonna raise venture capital for that. Like, it's not gonna happen. So, like, of course, there's this big, you know, the twist is like, and we made up an older pockmarked one. So, yeah. I think, to me, it's like, they've become objects of attraction, which is to me, like, for me, the stories of robots are always the best stories of objectification that you will ever read because they are about literal objects that you can buy and sell and stuff. So to me, they're always the beautiful metaphor for this. And so I think that's why.
But you had that before. I mentioned the film Sherry 2000.
And Blade Runner as well.
I will let the audience in much later. So hold your questions.
Write them down.
But before Oscar goes in this answer, you mentioned data, and now Madeleine talks about the sexy robots and data mentioned twice in Star Trek that he's programmed in multiple techniques.
Yes.
Yes. Actually, have you seen the last Frankenstein movie? I Frankenstein.
This is so funny because we literally just watched it in November. My partner and I are publishing our publisher will be publishing an anthology of James Bond stories because James Bond is now public domain in Canada, and the title of it is License Expired. And I wish you had been in our apartment when we came up with this. And we're really lucky. We got stories by Laird Barron and Charlie Strauss and Rob Wiersma and Jackie Baker and a bunch of people. And anyway, we were having dinner with our publisher, Cheezine Publications, and Sandra Castori said, "Hey, let's watch I, Frankenstein. It's supposed to be terrible."
Yeah, it is.
And oh my God, is it awful?
But he is pretty hot.
He is pretty hot.
He is pretty hunky. Hot.
Okay, let's move on from that.
Yeah. He's pretty hot. Yeah.
Can we have order in the courtroom?
Major feature in the robust development. Well,
yes.
To be totally honest, I don't know if I'm old enough to answer that question, but I shall try. I also think that it's been a moment from tin can robots more to human robots. Well, but of course this moment is not exact over time. You can go back to the old classic Blade Runner from 1984, for example, and you have perfect humanoids. But still, the example with Battlestar Galactica, I think, is excellent, because actually in that series you have the development from pretty tin can Centaurians all the way to perfect, sexy, mm-hmm. silence humanoids. But there's also one other development that I have noticed, and at least here in the West, because the West has always, well, perhaps not always, but often been afraid of new things. And we have often been afraid of the robot, as opposed to, for example, Japan, who has a much more positive view of robots, even if they happen to be philosophical spiders with girly voices. But I think I have noticed also in the West now that the robots more and more often are depicted in a positive way. For example, in the big movie Interstellar, I think that the AIs there, they were some of the greatest characters in that movie. And they always did the right thing, and they did it perfectly, and they were, well, they were simply excellent. Let's take the kid film, Big Hero 6, mm-hmm. with the medical robot, which this kid trains to become a superhero. Or, for example, Chappie, which I saw for, well, it wasn't a very good film, but still it's worth to mention, where they create an artificial intelligence who just wants to be friends and get along. And the only reason why there is a lot of firefights and killings is because the humans are afraid once again. So I think there is a lot more positive versions of robots today, even though, of course, we do have the number X version of Terminator in the movies right now, and also in Avengers Age of Ultron there is an AI who's gone crazy a bit. But still, also in Avengers there's also Jarvis.
Yes,
who's an AI, and he's on the good guy's side. So
But you have it previously in the Short Circuit movies. Number 5 is alive in Sweden. Yeah, the Short Circuit. It was a guy they wanted to destroy, and he was cute and, you know, yeah,
cuddly.
Yeah, and this little bit leads me to another question, and this is something we all come back to when we talk about science fiction and fantasy as well. Is mm-hmm. what makes it credible. The depiction of a robot. What makes it credible? What makes us as a reader believe in the robot we read about to see in a movie or TV series?
I was going to say Marvin the Paranoid Android. Mm-hmm. I really believe in him. I don't know why, because he's cynical and he's always depressed or something. He feels real.
Yes, I do. We all believe in Marvin. I think we can make a cult of that. Yes, go ahead.
I'm trying to think of like what. It's different when I think what makes me believe in an artificial intelligence. What I like about like what the reason for me when I buy into an artificial intelligence, and I believe that it is not just a metaphor for something else, or I think that like. Oh, this is... It's. I guess by believability, you mean, like, you believe this thing is truly a robot, or you believe this thing could be a human being? Which side...
You believe it's in the fiction.
Yeah. I think I really like them... Weirdly, I like them the more alien they are. Like, the more... What I believe about robot... When I believe a robot is truly, you know, not... Is truly robotic and not necessarily, like... piloted by someone else. During the Enlightenment period, there was this huge trend for automata, which were, you know, the like wooden robots that were, you know, people said like, oh no, it's clockwork. They're secret clockwork machines and that just happen to make all these sounds, and they, you know, I've made this perfect clockwork machine. And of course the secret is that there's someone inside puppeting it, right? And they would try to pass off. It's like, no, I'm a great inventor. I have created artificial life. And it's like, no, you've paid someone to you know, and there were all these like inventor scandals in Enlightenment France. about this. So when I believe that it's truly a not an automaton, not something piloted, not a cyborg, it's really a robot, is when robots say things to people that people would never say to each other. I really believe in the social awkwardness theory of robots, I guess, when they say just incredibly cruel things. But not because they're mean. Not because they are cruel, just because, like, you know, they've noticed something going on in the social fabric around them that makes no sense to them, or that makes too much sense to them sometimes. When I was writing VN, I wrote a really villainous character who really, when I was writing her, I made sure that she was morally wrong, but socially right all the time. Like, morally, like, every decision she made was terrible in terms of hurting other people, but she was always right about the human instincts of the people around her. She was always correct about their motivations and stuff, because I thought that was, you know, the best that she could probably do. So that's me.
I think I'll have to pass on that question. I don't know what makes it credible.
It's okay. You can pass a question.
But in a book, doesn't it have to be, credible character or something? It has to be written in a way that it is a character or something you can engage in?
We know so little about how actual robots in the future will work. Uh-huh. So almost anything will be credible in some way.
Maybe we have to train us on real robots to be able to read literature about these robots. Yes.
Oscar?
Well, to me, at least when I... Let's shrink this to just be about pop culture. In pop culture, when I read or watch a robot on television... to me, I guess they are credible if they are different, as you were actually talking about before. If they are just behave like any other human, I don't really see the point, actually. and I also believe that if we do manage to create a strong AI with its own consciousness, and we also manage to actually get all these things right when it comes to focus and pattern recognition and thinking, language, perception of reality. These perceptions will differ a lot from our human perceptions, because we are, as the old philosopher Kant would say, we can never actually get to das Ding an sich, to the thing in itself as it is. And perhaps the AI, with a different set of perceptions and a different set of pattern recognition skills, will perhaps not get to das Ding an sich, because I don't believe any kind of consciousness can actually do that, except if they're a god or something. But perhaps they will see the world in a different way and communicate it in also in a different way. So... Well, to me, anyway, that makes a credible AI.
But maybe what is not credible is, as Madeline said, if a robot behaves too human, if it gets, you know, human emotions, act exactly like a human, then it's not credible for me, because I lose it then, because then they have just done something like the robot become a human and he acted like a human acting love or whatever or duty. And that would not make it credible.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be natural and useful to build robots that act like humans?
Well, but why implement the right? Bad things? No.
we can go on there with the thought about humans and robots, because I was thinking about, for some hours ago in this very room, in another panel, John Henry Holmberg criticized Isaac Asimov's humans in... characters in his books, but Isaac Asimov wrote, as far as I'm concerned, much more interesting robots, and he wrote, of course, the Laws of Robotics.
His humans are super boring, so yeah. His humans are not convincing. The robots are super convincing.
And I think we have to mention him, and I think we have to mention the Laws of Robotics. And what do you think about them?
Me? I think that they were a good idea at the time. They might actually still be a good idea in some way, to have some kind of failsafe or something. I don't really know if it's a good idea. But I do not find it credible that they will ever be implemented, actually. Because as it seems to be right now, it's a lot of robotics and a lot of the artificial intelligence is they are funded by the military. And if you want a drone that goes on the battlefield and kills enemy soldiers, there is a slight problem if it has Asimov's three laws in it, which says you cannot kill a human. So they will never be implemented, at least not in that kind of way.
Yeah, with respect to that, I thought about the self-driving car, and the standard example is that a self-driving car can make the evaluation that instead of killing two people here, it turn and kill one person. A human would not be blamed for it because a human can't react that fast. Mm-hmm. The car or the programmer will probably be blamed for it. And how should they implement this laws not to kill humans when the two options are kill two humans or kill one human? I mean,
but that really isn't strong artificial intelligence, no, is it? It's just algorithms.
What do you mean?
Weak AI.
Do you mean strong AI that the robot is implemented in the way that the brain works? Is that strong AI for you?
Strong AI to me is when it actually has its own consciousness.
The car has a consciousness. The question is if it has a self-consciousness. It is conscious about itself as an entity in the world. I mean,
yeah, but that's being aware of yourself, having yourself as part of the model.
Well, because I think past a certain point, the car just kills anyone that cuts it off. that's when you know. That's the moment that you know. I really struggled with the three laws because they're iconic, right? Yeah. Like they're part of the legacy, and you have to, if you're going to write about robots, you have to deal with them. They're like they're like this Freudian kind of burden that you have to. It's like overcoming the father or something like that. There's like this, you know, anytime you write about robots, there's this like Freudian drama that happens where you have to overcome your father Isaac. And there's that, and because I really have issues with those stories, like they're like the prose is really hard to get through, and then the problems around the robots are sort of, they're programming problems for sure, but they're basically like little story problems about I told X to do Y, but I didn't specify clearly enough what I really wanted, and now I have this problem that I'm dealing with, which, by the way, is every monkey's paw story you've ever read. Every story that has to do with a magic wish, like a genie, or a Faustian bargain, or any kind of, you know, oh, I wished for this, and then it gave me that, because I didn't wish right. That's lines of code. Like, that's, you know, I didn't specify what I was really looking for. That's that makes sense. That's why those stories work, why they sort of work as fiction and as plots, because there's actually this old fairy tale lineage of why they shouldn't work, or why your wish is never right, why we can never frame our desires in the way that someone else can understand, which is a human communication problem, which is what all those stories are. You know, they're what are called HCI problems. They're human computer interaction problems. The problem is with us. We are the ones who can't make our wishes known in the way that we. It's very rarely the robot's fault. It's our problem for not saying what we want. But I think those. I think he'd purposefully designed those three laws to be easily memorable, easy to communicate, that you can exposit them at the beginning of every story, no matter where it's published, no problem. And they're simple enough to constantly break. Because every story is about how terrible they are. I would never, if I were in charge of any type of robot, I would never put in the three laws because they're so broadly defined. What I really, the thing I've always struggled with is, you know, it's not, our concern should never be, can I tell if this robot is really a robot? The concern should always be, can the robot tell that I am a human being? Does it know? And how does it know that I'm a person? Because if it's something like facial recognition, if I have a port wine stain, do I still count? If I have the wrong skin color, do I still count? If I'm too, if I'm a child, if I don't meet the height requirement, do I still count? If it's gait recognition and I have a limp, do I still count? If I have a speech impediment and it uses voice recognition, do I still count? Basically, there's a way to exclude everybody from the group of humanity in this very complicated algorithm.
How
right?
about infrared?
Well, yeah, no, but if you, yeah, but if you have lupus, you're screwed. or Raynaud's, or anything like that. Or, for example, if you have any form of epilepsy or a partial angioma under your skin, it means that you're running hotter on one side. So you, because there's a tangle of nerves and blood vessels, right? Or if, for example, you have cancer, so there's this giant wad of of tangled up stuff that won't look right. and stuff. So the thing I always like am really interested in is not like, oh no, the Nexus 6s look and, or the Cylons, they look and sound just like us. And it's like, yeah, but what do they think about you?
Thomas, do you have something to add on the
for the three laws? Well, in reality, of course, the only law will be don't do anything that will get the manufacturer sued.
That's all. Don't make us liable. The first law is do not indemnify. Everything else is fine.
But I will soon let in, we are running out of time, I will soon let in some questions from the audience, but just if you can make a quick answer on what you can't, so never mind. This is actually, we talked about, I mean, laws of robotics, and you talk about military robots, and recently there were scientists, among them I forgot the name,
Stephen Hawking,
that signed this petition that we should stop build robots for war because they will turn sentient and go against us and we'll have Terminator. Yes, your thoughts on that, please.
Well,
Tommy.
I probably lean towards not stopping development and handle it, because if you stop it, somebody will build it anyway. I mean,
well, would it be ethical not to use them? I mean, if self-driving cars can save 1 million people, how many people could military robots save by fewer mistakes and less collateral damage?
The robots can fight each other and we humans can have coffee.
Because this has come up a lot, Elon Musk has really been pushing this and Stephen Hawking has really been pushing this, and they've both been sort of preaching the singularity is nigh gospel, being like, you know, the end times are coming, Skynet will kill us all, blah, 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 and stuff. And what's really interesting is that, like, the truly revolutionary thing for them to have said is not, you know, hey, maybe you should stop developing these robots for war. The what they should have said, or what I wish they had said, was, hey, maybe you should stop making war. You know, like, it's not as though these are stupid people. They know the cost of this. They know what it does to society. They know what it does to human beings. But their first thought was like, maybe you shouldn't make robots for this. But maybe you should just not be engaging in these conflicts. But I think what they know is that the primary funder of this research is, as you say, the military. And now it's branching out into things like driverless cars and whatever. But DARPA is the one that funds that research. It's defense action research projects. Like, you can't. It's not like there are arts grants for this kind of thing. you can't ask the, you know, Robot Council of Ontario to give you money to do extra robots research. The people you ask are DARPA. So they have to couch it in this you know, in this very limited framework, rather than saying, like, hey, this military-industrial complex that you've got going on, let's rethink that.
Oscar?
Yes, I have never actually really understood why the AIS would turn against us. Just because in that way they would have to see us as some kind of threat. But why would they really care? I mean, we have in us, in our genes, programmed a survival instinct. Why would an AI have the same kind of survival instinct unless we give it to them? Really? But also, I do believe that there is an arms race going on. And I do believe that it is just as important, perhaps more important, than the nuclear race or the space race. Different factions, different powers in the world trying to develop AIs, military and non-military, as fast as they can. And I don't know if I believe in the singularity, but it is quite possible that the one who actually managed to create a strong AI first have the possibility to have this AI create an even stronger AI, and this one an even stronger, etc., etc. And so the first one to actually crack this will have a head start from all the others, a head start that might not be possible to catch. Mm-hmm. So, yes, it is an arms race, and it's going on right now, and we shall see, perhaps on the other side of the singularity.
Well, we have a little time left for any questions from the audience, and we have four hands, and I know that you in a white t-shirt actually was first, so yes, you.
Oscar was just saying what I wanted to say, that the AIs haven't inherited our reptile brain.
Right.
So we have to consider that. They are different from us. And when Madeline said that, that she couldn't cope with God, I would say that I would ask God, why did you create me with a reptile brain?
Yeah, no, well, because...
more of a statement than a question, that we were, the robots were not created with a reptile brain, but why were we? And now, next question...
No, it's not a question, it's just a comment.
A comment?
When you talked about sexy robots, I just wanted you to remind you of Maria in Metropolis.
Exactly, yeah, no,
yeah. She's been around for a long time.
She's
the 1920s.
She's the ultimate virgin whore dichotomy.
Yes, if not everyone heard Maria from the Metropolis from 1920s.
Maria and Bad
Maria. The original sexy robots.
Yes.
I think you were reversed, David.
I also have a comment. It's not that manifesto that all those scientists... I read that manifesto, and there's absolutely nothing in it about any Skynet scenario.
But we are not talking about Skynet here.
Yeah.
Next question.
No, I said Terminator. The comment was about the manifesto of the scientists, and that was nothing about Skynet on it. I said Terminator.
Or a Skynet-like scenario.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anders?
This talk about Asimov and its robots and the specific kinds of intelligence that might be out there. That's a short story that I, for some reason, keep remembering. He did one about autism.
An Asimov story about autism.
Yeah.
That's the question.
They're doing robotic explorations of foreign planets, but the guys, because stuff, everyday people get burnt out rather quickly when connected to these sort of off-site robots through some kind of neural link. Then they hook up an autistic kid to this robot, and for the first time, when he realizes that he is in full control of his body and how he receives all kinds of perceptions are totally under his control, he goes like, "Yay! and starts working.
Well, I think like that's actually like this the concern that I've like people when VN first came out, people were like, oh, do you think that this could happen? How do you know that like robots can love you? And I'm like, well, how do you know that anyone loves you? And stuff. And it's because, you know, all humanity is a performance.
And with that, we can all go out and do the Turing test to find out if anyone here at all is human, because the panel is over.
Yes.
Thank you all for coming.
Yes,
thank you to the panelists. And you can, of course, buy these guys beer in the bar and ask them more questions about robots.
Musiken av Psychedelic Pedestrian från Free Music Archive. Besök gärna vår hemsida på svekonpoddar.se.